Ready? All right. So for me, sex was a taboo subject growing up. I don't know about for you, but my family never talked about sex. In fact, I remember my parents peck kissing twice in my lifetime. I never saw them cuddling together. I think I saw them hug twice as well in my lifetime. I think it went along with those peck kisses. And whenever something amorous would happen on television, it was turned off immediately. Having grown up in the church, I don't remember any sermon on sex. And believe me, I would remember. So the message from the church seemed to be sex. Don't do it. That's it. In our youth group, that was the message. Sex. Don't do it. I didn't know what it was. But I did understand some things over time. That sex, you see, was dirty. It was shameful. It was unspeakable. And yet, I would watch TV and they would say sex is wonderful, enjoyable, fun, exciting, worthy of pursuit. Well, who was right? The idea, sex, don't do it, actually became a program. And the Southern Baptist Convention started this program called True Love Waits. And it went around to teens all over the country. 2.4 million teens signed a pledge saying, I will not have sex until I am married. 2.4 million said that. And parents everywhere were relieved. Wow, so good. My kids are going to be virgins when they get married. Yay. Well, years later, Columbia University and Yale University followed up with those kids to find out how they did with their pledge. Guess what percentage of these committed, Christian, churched kids? What percentage of them actually kept that pledge? Oh, you guys are mean. It was all of 12%. 12% actually kept that pledge. And remember, these are the committed ones. These are the ones who said, I am committed to this. I will do this. 12%. At no other time in the history of the world has our views about sex changed as much as they have in the last few decades. Gallup did a poll of over 1,000 20-somethings. And these 20-somethings said, 62% of them said couples should try living together first before they get married. In fact, almost half, 43%, said they wouldn't even consider getting involved in a relationship with someone unless they lived together with them first. They would not marry that person unless they lived with that person first. So you gotta try it out. See if you're sexually compatible and all that sort of thing. The Christian message of sex, don't do it, is falling on deaf ears, even within the church. In my own experience, as I've said before, almost all of the couples who come to me to get married are already having sex. These are people who are in the church quite often, already having sex. And the message that the church used to send about, if you have sex, terrible things are going to happen to you. You're going to get pregnant. You're going to get an STD or an STI. Well, now with advances in technology, those things have become less scary for a lot of people. And the fear tactic is no longer working. But beyond all of this, having grown up in the church and having read through the Bible many times and seen what the Bible says, and it says sex before marriage is wrong, it's sin. But my question has always been, why? Why is it wrong? Now just ask yourself that question right now. Why is it wrong? Well, it's wrong because God says so. Okay. But why does God say so? What makes it wrong? Isn't it enough that two people love each other? Isn't that enough to make it okay to have sex? That's what a lot of people believe today. In fact, I might go so far as to say that's what most people believe today. And I didn't really, in the 35 years I've been a Christian, I haven't until recently figured out a decent answer to that question, which I'm going to share with you this morning. Why is sex before marriage wrong? And I want to thank Pastor Tim Keller for helping me out with this. He kind of opened my eyes to some things that I was not aware of before. And I think, in the end, we have undersold the biblical view of sex. When the world is saying sex is beautiful, sex is wonderful, it's something to be pursued, you might be thinking, well, Pastor, you're probably going to come and tell us it's not that great. I'm here to tell you, it's better. That's right, you can giggle now. It's better. Biblical sex, in fact, I'm going to tell you something that you're not going to believe. You might guffaw at this a little bit, but I'm going to tell you this, and I believe this to be true. Biblical sex is the best sex. Biblical sex is the best sex. And you might not be convinced now, but I'm hoping you'll be convinced by the end. And in order to look at this, we're going to go to Jesus' most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, found in Matthew chapter 5. And he addresses the subject of sex in regard to adultery. And he says this, "You have heard the commandment that says, you must not commit adultery." And here he starts off affirming the Old Testament moral that says that sex is to be found within a covenant only. It's to be found only within the marriage covenant. And you might say, well, why do you use this word covenant? Because it's such an old-fashioned word. That's because there's no modern word to really describe what a covenant is. A covenant is an absolute dedication to something no matter what. It's completely unlike a contract. Contract is, there are stipulations in that contract. I will do this if you do that. A covenant says, I will do this, period, end of story, no matter what happens. And so sex, you see, is designed as a covenant good. It's a covenant good. It's a powerful ceremony within the safety, commitment, and intimacy of a legal covenant only. But today, sex is seen more as a consumer good. Is seen mostly as a physical act. In fact, I've been told, don't try this, but I have been told that on your phone right now, you can go to certain websites and find other people in the neighborhood who just want to have sex. And you can go to them and have sex. Because it's just physical, right? That's what we're being told. That's what we're being sold. It's just physical. And yet somehow deep down inside, we know that's not true. We know that having sex with someone is not like shaking hands. Right? It's different. In fact, there's a whole different category of crime regarding sexual crimes than there is of just general crimes. Now, what do I mean by the idea that sex has become a consumer good? Well, let's look at another consumer relationship that we have. You have a consumer relationship with your grocery store. I have a consumer relationship with my grocery store. And it works something like this. I choose my grocery store based on where I can get the best product for the least cost. Does anyone else shop like that? Yeah. Isn't that, that's a normal consumer relationship. You want the best product for the least cost. It says in this kind of relationship, it's saying you will commit to me. Because here's the thing. If my grocery store starts cutting corners, getting an inferior product, starts upping their prices, I'm going to go shop somewhere else. Aren't you? Yeah, that's a normal consumer relationship where it says my needs are primary. And the evaluation This is important. The evaluation in a consumer relationship never ends. There will never come a day where I go, you know what? I'm committed to Superstore no matter what. I don't care what anyone else does. I'm going to go to Superstore. Never. That's a normal consumer relationship. Now, think about that when it comes to sex. If sex is part of a consumer relationship, then whenever we have sex outside of marriage, it is part of a consumer relationship. And the underlying question in sex is, can I do better than this person? Can I get someone prettier? Someone maybe more curvy? And the thing is, not only am I evaluating the other person, I know something else. They're evaluating me. So now I have this pressure. I got to perform. I got to make sure I'm doing good enough or I'm going to lose this customer. That's a normal consumer relationship. Think about what that does to the stability of a relationship. Sex becomes a test. And you're tested every time you have sex. Can I do better? And so you set up the relationship already with a consumerist mentality. You want the best product for the least cost. There's no wonder that those who live together before they get married have an up to 80% higher chance of getting divorced once they get married. Because they've already set up their relationship like consumers. They're already testing each other. And that doesn't stop with a white dress and a ceremonial kiss. They've already set up their relationship as consumers. Now, let's dig deeper. See, sex, and this might surprise you, was God's idea. Now, you might have been told by some religious figures, sex is for making babies. And you can tell how many times someone has had sex by how many babies they have. It doesn't take a Bible scholar to know that is not true. There's a whole book in the Bible related to sexual pleasure. The Song of Songs, I was told in seminary, is so graphic in its sexuality that Jewish men aren't even allowed to read it until they're 30 years old. And the language in the Song of Songs is so sexually explicit that the people who translate the Bible, they translate it in very conservative terms, but let me tell you, in the original Hebrew, it is very, very graphic. In fact, there are pictures in there that talk about genitalia ready for the sexual act. It's that graphic. Now, I just upped readership of Song of Songs by 1,000%. If God is so pro-sex, as I believe he is, what is the purpose of sex? As I mentioned a few weeks ago, it was God's idea that marriage is about 1 + 1 = 1. 1 + 1 = 1. This is God's math. He takes two people and he molds them, melds them into one. And this is, I think, so important. This is one of the missing ingredients, I think, in our teaching about sex. Are you ready? Sex is like a sacrament. Sex is like a sacrament. What is a sacrament? A sacrament is a physical manifestation of something that is not physical. Let me give you a couple of examples of things that we practice in the church that are sacraments. The Lord's table is a sacrament. It is symbolic of taking Jesus, his blood and his body, and we ingest them. He becomes part of who we are. That is a physical manifestation of a non-physical reality. Baptism is another sacrament. Baptism is about, when you go under the water, it's about dying to your old self. Coming up out of the water is a brand new life in Christ. It is a physical expression of a non-physical reality. Sex is like a sacrament in that it reminds us of our vows. Because sex is becoming, and this, you know, won't be a surprise, being completely naked with another person. And it's saying, you are getting all of me. That is the covenant that we make. When we stand up before our friends and family and we make a vow, we are saying, I'm giving you all of myself. And sex is like a vow renewal ceremony that you do not invite your friends and family to. In that nakedness, we're saying nothing is hidden, nothing is held back. Sex is about giving. It reminds us that in marriage, I am there to give. I'm not there to receive. That's what a vow is. That's what a covenant is. You see. So you see the difference between sex in a consumer relationship and sex in a covenant relationship. So sex outside of marriage is really insincere. It's saying, I will be physically naked with you, but I'm going to maintain my independence from you. I'm going to hold back from you part of myself. And in fact, sex can be something that is used to try to hold the relationship together instead of reflecting the vows that have already been taken. It's no longer about giving, it's about taking. And it creates insecurity, questions, and the evaluation that never ends. Do I look good enough? Do I perform well enough? Can I do better? Can I get better? Sex inside of marriage reminds us of our oneness, a covenant that we have made. It is a complete giving over to the other person. It is a reminder of the promise we have made. So the question, why is sex outside of marriage wrong? The answer is because it's a lie. It's a lie. We're not being sincere, saying, I'll be naked with you, but you can't have me. It's a lie. And our God is a God of truth. And not only that, when you set up a relationship in a consumer kind of way, you damage the chances of intimacy later on. Because you've already set up the relationship to be an evaluation, a constant evaluation. Jesus continues. He says, but I say, anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. I have had the odd, brave, exclusively men at this point, come to me and say they think they have a problem with lust. And you know what? I give them full marks for being that brave. Honestly, I do. Because that's very hard to admit. Think about how many times in your connect groups you've talked about your lust problem. I believe it might be less than one. Right? It's hard to talk about these things. But in talking with these men, I find quite often they don't have a lust problem. They interpret their lust problem as an attraction problem. They say, I'm attracted to women I'm not married to. Guess what? If we weren't sexually attracted to people we weren't married to, we'd never get married. Gonna let that one sink in for a second. Right? And you'll notice what Jesus says. He said, anyone who even looks at a woman with attraction? That's not what he said. With lust. And this word that he uses is very interesting. He uses a word that is quite unique. In fact, it encapsulates a number of concepts that are almost impossible to translate into one word in English. And for sure, sexual attraction is part of this. But there's two other important aspects to when Jesus uses that word lust that are important for what we're talking about today. Because it's not just sexual attraction. When Jesus said, whoever looks at a woman with lust, there's two things that he adds to that. One is idolatry, and one is greed. Now think about what that looks like in a sexual relationship. In an idolatrous relationship, it's saying, I have to have you. I will not be fulfilled as a human being unless I have you. That's idolatry. No one is supposed to have that role in our lives other than our Father. So when we worship someone, we say, I have to have you sexually. That's what's going to complete me. That's just idolatry. And then think about greed. The thing about greed is, it's selfish. It's all about me. It's all about what I want. It's all about what I have to have. So when Jesus says, when you look at a woman, or a woman looks at a man, and you look at that person as though, I have to have you. And it's all about me. That is the very definition of a consumerist sexual relationship. Which brings us right into the ultimate expression, I think, of consumerist sexual relationship, and that's pornography. Did you know that last year on the website Pornhub, they had 28.5 billion visits last year to that site? Now, just to do a little math, that's about 4 visits per year for every man, woman, and child on this planet. And that's just one site. That's how big pornography is. In fact, pornography is so big, it rakes in more money than professional baseball, basketball, and professional football combined. That's how big pornography is. And it's becoming more and more accepted. What kind of effect does pornography have on our relationships today? A book was written called Premarital Sex in America, How Young Americans Meet, Mate, and Think About Marrying. And in all their research regarding pornography, they found 3 truths that stand out, 3 specific things that have affected our relationships. Overall, they said pornography has affected every marriage in this room, in one way or another. But here are the specific things that they said. First of all, people who use pornography have crushingly unrealistic expectations about performance and appearance. Crushingly unrealistic. Think about what that means. You will always be disappointed. Because you will always look to your spouse to be what you see on the screen or on those pictures, and you will always be disappointed. They don't look like that. They don't perform like that. Disappointed, disappointed, disappointed. Think about what that does to a marriage. Second, and this one's really damning, men have decreasing tolerance for the difficulties of real relationships with a diminishing desire to get married. Why bother with real people? People are troublesome. People come with baggage and issues. But they don't in pornography. And you set yourself up sexually to think that that person on the screen is just there to be used and tossed aside. Think about what that does in a marriage relationship when you think your spouse's body is just there to be used and then tossed aside. Finally, number 3. All women are being forced to accommodate their appearance and behavior to the porn industry. What you wear, think about the plastic surgery that's going on today to enhance this, lift that, all in an attempt, quite often, to accommodate the porn industry, because that's what they look like. People become objects where sex uses people and isolates people. People who use pornography are training themselves to be consumers, to take people and use them. A study by the University of Chicago called Sex in America, a Definitive Study. This was a massive study done about sex and regarding married couples, people living together, and singles. And while the message in media is often, who's having the greatest sex? Singles, right? And who's having the most sex? Singles. Found that that's not true. Nor is it true of those who are just living together. They found in a surprising conclusion that those who are having the most sex and the best sex are married couples. It's almost like God knew what he was talking about. Amazing. That's why I can say with confidence, biblical sex is the best sex. So there are two responses to this. Two things. Number one is repent. You might be sitting here and you might be thinking, I have blown it. My spouse and I, we had sex before we got married, and we've been evaluating each other ever since. Some of us are single, and we've spent so much time watching pornography that we've set up any future relationship in a use them sort of mentality. But I've got good news. God can forgive you, and God is willing to forgive you. Isn't that great? So no matter what you've done in the past, there is forgiveness and there is healing. I just want you to hear that this morning. Do you sense the Holy Spirit speaking to you that there is healing for you? No matter what you've done in the past, you can turn away from it this morning, and God is willing to heal you. Of all the greed and idolatry when it comes to sexuality, to all the hours of looking at pornography, to all the consumerism that you have built into your soul already, there is healing available through the power of Jesus Christ. And many of us in this room have experienced that healing and have needed that healing in our marriages and in our sexual relationship with our spouse. The second thing is this: pursue covenant. Pursue covenant. All too often, in marriages, we forget what the covenant is about. And the covenant is about, you get all of me, regardless of what I get back. That is covenant. And some of us in this room have been treating our marriages more like a contract. Maybe more as a consumer relationship. I'll do this if you do that. That's not a covenant. And it doesn't bring intimacy. It doesn't bring the greatest state that a marriage can be in. So to pursue covenant, for those of us who are married, means we need to turn away from the consumerism in our relationships. And for those of us who are unmarried, begin to get yourself around the idea that you are not ready for marriage until you are ready to give yourself entirely to someone, regardless of what you get back. And to find someone who also believes that. That's important. Sex inside of marriage is secure, it's binding, it's intimate, it is a vow renewal ceremony, it is emotionally satisfying. See? Biblical sex is the best sex. Let's continue on what Jesus had to say, though. He said, so if your eye, even your good eye, causes you to lust, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your hand, even your stronger hand, causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. Now, Jesus isn't literally meaning you need to cut off hands and gouge out eyes, as though that would help somehow. But he is saying, take this idea seriously. Take your sexual self seriously. Because the consequences of a consumer sexual relationship are huge. And the word he uses for hell here is very specific. It's Gehenna. Gehenna was a real place at the time that Jesus said this. It was basically a garbage dump outside the city of Jerusalem, where people would throw their garbage and the fires just continued to burn and burn. And if they got low, more garbage was piled on, and you know how garbage dumps work, right? And that is what it's like for a lot of people in their sexual relationships right now. They're never satisfied. They're not finding any real emotional gratification in their sexual relationship. It's like the person who's dying of thirst out on the ocean, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. Looking for something that's not there because they're looking at sex as a consumer outside of marriage. But it goes beyond that. Let's dig one level deeper, and I'm hoping I can take you there. But in order to do that, you need to rid yourself of the idea that sex is dirty. Can you do that for 1 second? You see, sex is a sacrament that has a foreshadowing element to it. Because marriage was never meant to be ultimately satisfying. There's only one relationship that we are designed for that is ultimately satisfying, that requires covenant, not consumerism. Marriage is to show us, even at the best that marriage is only a glimpse, only a shadow of falling into the arms of our ultimate lover. The one who knows us entirely and loves us completely. Marriage is meant to point us towards God, not consumerism. And you can't, and this relationship that we have with God requires covenant, not consumerism. Anytime we approach God and say, "Well, God, I'll go to church if you make my life a little easier, things go well for me, I'll go to that connect group. You know, if you do this for me over here," that's contract. It's not a covenant. And God already did his part with the covenant. He gave all of himself on the cross. He gave all of himself. And he's offering that to us. How will we respond? Some of us in this room have not made a response that says, "You can have all of me." We might have said, "Well, you can have part of me. Or most of me." That's not a covenant. Covenant says, "Take all of me. Anything you want in my life, you can have it. Have my finances, have my spouse, have my health, have my safety, have my freedom, have my house. Whatever you want, have it. Take it." That is covenant. And that is where intimacy occurs. The deeper into covenant that we get with our King, with our Father, the more we will grasp intimacy with our Creator. It's all about covenant. Now let's get back to sex for just one moment. Biblical sex is more binding, safer, enjoyable, and fulfilling than anything this world's trying to sell you. It is a covenant renewal. It is safer, more secure, where you can be unjudged, accepted, and belong. Without covenant, the question that people have in their sexual relationship is always, "Should I be finding my groceries somewhere else?" The problem is not that the Bible is against sex, and it's certainly not that God is against sex. God is against unfulfilling, insecure, unaffirming, and empty sex. Sex that leaves you feeling vulnerable, alone, and used. And that is why I can say biblical sex is the best sex. As we were singing this morning, one song kind of hit me. And the words go, Your love is greater. Your love is stronger. Your love awakens me. Think about how deep that message really is. Your love is greater. Your love is stronger. Do you believe that this morning? Because some of us in this room don't believe it yet. We're still looking for love elsewhere when our ultimate lover is in this room right now, arms wide open, waiting to have a deeper relationship with you. Your love is greater. Your love is stronger. Your love awakens me. Not our spouse's love, not our kids' love, not our parents' love. Your love awakens me. Your love is greater. Your love is stronger. I'm going to get Andrew to lead us in that song. Just maybe the chorus a couple times. Let's sing together.